You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Rubella hits the shelves of the criminal black market. It's the crimeware kit, not the German measles. Nikors gets shifty by going retro. iPhone unlocking specialists endure an apparently minor breach. The sad story of structural extremism on the internet. Finland says the Russians are coming there, too. Snooper's charter setback. A proposed bill would make it easier for DHS to clean U.S. federal networks. And the latest crypto wars agreement is said to just be key escrow. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, April 27th, 2018. Flashpoint describes a cut-rate criminal kit, Rubella, that offers some point-and-click builder functionality and generates malicious payloads for spam. It's not sophisticated, but skid criminals can rent it for just $40 a month. Rubella, the crimeware, not the German measles, is another symptom of the ongoing commodification of what's being sold in the criminal-to-criminal black market. The venerable Nikors botnet, whose masters control millions of compromised machines they use to pump out spam, has gotten a little more evasive by going a little retro. Nikors has been emailing archive files that unzip to a file with a .url extension that opens a page directly in a browser. It's old school, but on the other hand, email scanners that hunt for more complicated new-school infection chains are liable to miss it. It will take a little time for many scanners to readjust, which opens a window of opportunity for the bad guys. Grayshift, the iPhone unlocking specialists who've sold their gray key to law enforcement agencies, has been the victim of code theft. Unknown parties apparently got the source code snippets from a customer site where Grayshift's user interface was briefly exposed to the internet. The hackers demanded ransom, which Grayshift refused. The company thinks the software that was lost, judging from what the hackers have posted, is just code used to show messages to a user. Thus, it seems unlikely that the underworld will soon be unlocking iPhones left, right, and center. Still, like any data breach, this one is at least mildly upsetting. A piece about online inspiration in the New York Times concludes that by their nature, social media tend to breed extremism. Quote, Attention, praise, and a sense of importance and agency, end quote, are easy to come by online. And who wouldn't want those, especially if you're young, frustrated, and feeling no count? And worse yet, the algorithmically discerned rate of engagement is self-reinforcing, serving more like-minded messages until the recipients come to believe that what they're reading is good, normal, mainstream, common sense, even if that common sense has induced them to seriously consider ramming a car into a crowd of people the driver is convinced are enemies of all that's good, normal, and mainstream. It seems a pity that the old U.S. State Department Think Again, Turn Away campaign was widely derided as ineffectual before its abandonment. Think Again and Turn Away seems exactly what one would hope for, but the good, normal, mainstream common sense on the internet said that whole slogan was nothing more than just tired, warmed over, just say no. That's what we read, anywho. We might add to the observations in the Times the strange disinhibition that grips people when they get behind a keyboard. That disinhibition is on display right now as the arrest of the alleged Golden State Killer after decades of futile investigation shows. One is happy indeed that police in California finally collared a man who is alleged to have been an unusually vicious serial killer with crimes going back to the 1970s. What's beyond unfortunate is the trope of amateur detectives who are hounding the accused man's family with preposterous accusations of complicity. This is so much easier online than it would be in person, but increasingly the ground separating cyberspace and physical space looks depressingly like a slippery slope. All we can advise is, think again, turn away. Finland has joined the ranks of countries who've found state-directed cyber activity targeting their industrial and energy infrastructure. In its report for 2017, the SUPO, Finland's Security Intelligence Service, details widespread and ongoing attempts to infiltrate networks. Intellectual property is among the more sought-after targets. The energy sector and its associated research and development activities are of particular interest to foreign intelligence services. Traditional espionage involving recruitment of Finns to deliver information also continues, and, as the SUPO says, quote, especially Russian intelligence organizations are active in Finland, end quote. The UK's Snoopers Charter suffered a setback at week's end as the High Court directed that the law be revised to require prior independent review before it can access retained metadata. The Home Office has its take on the decision. They're pleased to note that the court has upheld the fundamental tenets of the law, and they'll be happy to make the minor adjustments the bench has asked for. The plaintiffs who challenge the law are also pleased. They see the decision as a significant blow to the surveillance state, albeit a far from lethal blow. The Federal Network Protection Act, S.2743, would fast-track the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's ability to pull compromised software and systems from federal networks. This would enable DHS to rapidly exclude problematic products from government use without going through protracted interagency review. The bill is currently before the Senate. We've seen a number of recent attempts to come up with an approach to encryption that balances legitimate security and law enforcement interests with fundamental rights to privacy. Experts who've reviewed Ray Ozzie's proposed modus vivendi in the crypto wars tend to conclude that it's a form of key escrow. Some compare it to the late Clipper chip, late and largely unlamented. Ozzie's approach seems to have left the pro-encryption side of the crypto wars cold. They see it as just another species in the genus of weakened encryption.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Dr. Charles Clancy. He's the director of the Hume Center for National Security and Technology at Virginia Tech. Dr. Clancy, welcome back. I wanted to get kind of a reality check from you when it comes to the 5G rollout. I think we're starting to see some of the marketing messages ramp up. But what's your perspective on when we might actually start seeing things affect us in the real world?
I think it'll be a few more years before we really start to see 5G at scale. A lot of the marketing right now is around spectrum. So the FCC has identified here in the U.S. a few different bands that could be used uniquely for 5G. But honestly, the standards aren't even finished yet, much less implemented and developed. Hmm. The standards basically fall into two components. There's the radio access network, which is known as New Radio, or NR. And the standards for that are mostly done, I would say, at this point. The first thing we will see is a 5G cell tower talking to a 4G core network. And that will give you faster data rates, but it won't let you take advantage of all the new features that are part of the 5G core. The 5G core is going to have all kinds of exciting new capabilities specifically designed to support Internet of Things and other IoT use cases. So things like network slicing, which allows you to create virtualized layers of the core network specifically for different classes of IoT devices. Really exciting new capability. It takes software-defined networking and network function virtualization to a whole new level in the cell phone network. But those standards are still at the early stages right now and probably still another couple years before they're finished, much less implemented and developed and rolled out.
And so what kinds of security elements are we going to see baked into 5G?
Well, the 5G radio access network has very similar security properties, I'd say, to the 4G network. There are some interesting things that are being done to try and improve some of the vulnerabilities in 4G. One example would be the IMSI catchers that are able to act as a fake base station and cause your phone to provide the unique identifier off your SIM card. Mm. Last week, there was a set of changes to the 5G standard that were approved that will now encrypt that identity before it is sent to the network, which will prevent those IMSI catchers from being able to be effective against 5G phones.
Are those the popularly known as stingrays? Is that what we're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the brand name that's associated with it most frequently. But it's basically sometimes called a base station emulator, but it is essentially a device that acts like a cell phone base station and engages your phone in a conversation in order to get your phone to reveal its identity.
Now, will we still have the issue of sort of the backwards compatibility issue of forcing a device to be able to fall back to some of the older standards?
Of course, yeah. So 2G, 3G, and 4G would all still be vulnerable. So 5G is at a great inflection point right now to begin to solve some of the problems that we've been wanting to solve for a while in telecommunications and cybersecurity. But of course, because of the backward compatibility, it will be many more years before those older technologies are fully phased out and we have the full benefit of these new security features.
All right, Dr. Charles Clancy, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
My guest today is Medica Keo. She's Chief Technical Officer at Farsight Security, a company that offers passive DNS cybersecurity solutions. Previously in her career, she led the first security initiative at Cisco Systems in the mid-90s and authored the first Cisco book on security.
My background is that I have an electrical engineering degree, and my first job was starting out designing and deploying campus backbone networks. So the first month on the job was the infamous Morse worm that is historically known as the first internet worm. Hmm. And I would say that started my foray into security because I became very involved as we were designing our backbone to look at authentication, integrity, and auditing functions, the basics of security. And some of the listeners may laugh, but we were changing out software by actually changing out the EEPROMs. So actual chips were how we did software upgrades when there were issues found, bugs found, that now some of them might be classified as security issues. So as my career progressed and the internet grew to billions of devices and millions of users, the criminal and malicious activity also increased. And so I find myself now at Farsight Security, since everyone in the company also has a passion for making the internet a more trusted and secure and stable means of communicating and also creating business transactions.
Now, one of the things we wanted to discuss today was using DNS data as an early warning system for cyber threats. Can we start off, can you describe for us, where do we find ourselves in terms of how DNS data is used and what are the implications of that?
Domain names are the basic functions of anything that you're doing on the internet. Humans think in names and machines think of numbers. Every device on the internet is identified by a name and a number. The number is referred to as an IP address, and the name is typically the fully qualified domain names. So what the DNS does, it associates various information with domain names assigned to a particular entity, and very often you're doing a mapping between the domain name and an IP address. One item that is extremely important for many to understand and who may not be so familiar with the domain name system is that the criminals really have started utilizing the domain name system as a fundamental building block to many of their scams. There are things called domain generating algorithms, where it's a capability to generate hundreds of domain names a second. And they're designed for resiliency so that if a domain name gets discovered to be used for malicious use, they just move to other domain names. And so this is a way that the malicious underground is able to register and retain control of several botnets that can be used for malicious campaigns.
And so in terms of being an early warning system, how does that come into play?
There are malicious actors who try to impersonate your specific domain name or email address. So with the real-time information, you can determine whether or not somebody is trying to impersonate your site and whether or not you're sending your information to, like, your banking credentials, username, and passwords to a fake banking site, where then the criminal underground can use it to sell your information. There are numerous breaches of domain registers where domain names have been impersonated. And so this often happens to luxury brands to create websites for various fraud scams, or to any sites where the malicious activity requires a user to believe that a site they are going to is valid. So these scams used to get usernames, passwords, and other personal information. What I really think is very important is also that everybody should be paying attention to how are criminals flying under the radar, utilizing international domain names, for example, as lookalike domains to try and create email and phishing scams. And also, how can you detect IPv6-related spam and phishing campaigns? So I think everybody has a part in the ecosystem.
I'm curious, from your own point of view, coming up in this industry, do you have any words of wisdom or advice for those who are looking for a career in security?
I do. My advice would be never stop learning and never stop asking questions. I think security has, it's very complex because there's so many details that are involved. And I think that the more you understand, the more you ask questions, why is this, and even challenging some of the old ideas, because we need new input, we need new ways of thinking. The old ways of thinking of security are clearly not good enough. So I would challenge everybody to just look at, you know, how are things done? How can we make things more secure? How are you identifying somebody? What information are you logging and auditing? How do you preserve integrity of information knowing that nobody has modified anything in transit? So it's a very, very large field. And I just encourage people to look into their passions and never stop asking why and offering solutions.
That's Medica Kao from Farsight Security.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. Their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business.